All right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 30, which is also Episode 62 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and with me is someone who thinks I have a crowd of fans at my house, Hugh.
Yes. Yeah, I was telling Rob I got completely fooled this weekend. I watched the NFL kickoff, and because no good teams were playing, I watched the Bears-Lions game, because I'm in the Chicago market, and that's what you get. And I guess Fox used a fake crowd in that game, and I texted him just like, what is wrong with your state? why do you have a full stadium? And then I later found out that it was in fact a digitally imposed crowd, unlike what like NBA and WWF are doing, where it's like monitors of people on Zoom, which you can clearly tell are not live attendees.
Yeah, I think now that you mention it, if I remember right, they actually licensed EA's Sims technology to do that. That may have been another sport. That may have been baseball. One of them is doing that.
So baseball, I've only seen like clips of on SportsCenter, and that is definitely empty stadium.
Okay, yeah.
They're occasionally they have like cardboard cutouts. But I hate baseball. It's the most boring sport ever. If you like it, that's fine. Not my thing. But the clips I've seen on SportsCenter, they're always empty.
I think it's like Pokemon and stuff like that in the Japanese stadiums. Mm-hmm. So what's been going on? Yeah. I feel like it's been a while. We kept trying to record and we've both been pretty busy. And I feel like it's kind of been a while again.
I mean, it probably hasn't, but it does feel like a while. And, what have I been doing? Oh, so I finally, because my wife had a break in her work, we started watching The Mandalorian, which I assume you've seen.
Oh, yeah.
I assume I'm the last person on Earth to have seen The Mandalorian. So, I mean, I'm not going to intentionally include any spoilers, but some might slip out. I was watching it, and the whole time watching it, I just kept thinking, this is a JRPG. Like,
I could
the
see
structure
that.
Of it is a JRPG. Now, I get it. It's a Western, and samurai films steal from Westerns, and JRPGs steal from samurai films, and Hollywood steals from samurai films, because Star Wars itself was a ripoff of a samurai film. And, you know, everybody rips off everybody. I get that. But there were just a few things in that show where it was very, very, you know, JRPG-like. You know, like, you travel to a new location, and then some bad stuff happens and all your ship's parts get stolen. So then you're like, I'm going to go get my ship's parts back. Oh, wait, if you want to get your ship's parts back, you have to go get this egg from a cave. Why? Who cares?
Yep.
And that's like every JRPG.
Yeah.
And then like the whole bit where it's like you do adventures, like someone joins your party and you do an adventure with them. And then you don't see them for a while. And then at the end, the whole party comes together to like confront the final boss.
Where would you rate this in, would you rate it high in Star Wars cinema canon or lower? Or
I rank it as better than anything they have done since Return of the Jedi.
I agree too. I wish this is what the prequels were like. I wish this is what the new ones were like. It just feels like Star Wars to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree. Easily the best thing they've done since Jedi. I don't even think it's especially close. Like, as much as I think it's funny that it uses a lot of these tropes that you also see in JRPGs, ultimately it is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited for Season 2. And,
Yep. I heard there was a trailer for that, but I didn't see it. So that's not really game related. I have not been playing a ton of games this week because I've been watching shows. I've been catching up on the TV backlog. And I guess I should probably start another game soon, but I don't know what I'm going to start yet.
Yeah, that's what Game Club is for, right?
Yep. Yep. So what have you been up to?
Well, first of all, I wanted to mention that with this new microphone I'm using, I think I kept turning my head away to look at show notes. The last episode. So in Michigan, I heard that I kept trailing off here and there. So sorry about any annoying audio issues, but hopefully that's fixed this time. But this weekend, I think it was Saturday, I watched the Big 20. Do you know what that is? It's a speed run competition.
Nope, I do not.
It's 20 NES games, like Mega Man 1 and 2, Ninja Gaiden, 50 lines in Tetris, yada, yada, yada. And okay. you wait 30 seconds between each game. A lot of people played it. A guy named Yogi, who is a big retro speedrunner, won it by a long shot. It was one of the most impressive runs I've ever seen. So that was pretty cool to watch. And I'm back into Final Fantasy VII. I'm liking that. I'm really side questing that one. And I finally opened up Mario Sonic Olympics 2020, the Tokyo one. And I haven't really gotten into the RGP part of the story of it. Mm-hmm. But there's, the two-player or multiplayer, just pick an event and press some buttons. So I was doing that with my son, and it's all right. I'm excited to try to actually play some of the story eventually. But, yeah, other than that, that's about it.
All right. Yeah. Let's talk about some news here. Reinforcement learning in Super Mario Brothers. I feel like there's an article like this about once every 12 to 18 months.
Probably, yeah. And this is in German, but Chrome auto-translates, if you like. Yeah, these guys, I don't know if you know what TensorFlow is. It's Google's AI chip.
Yeah, yeah.
They use that to make machine learning of Super Mario Brothers, and they had people try to beat it, and I think it beat all but one person, and it's because the one person used a warp tunnel or something that the AI just didn't find yet. So that was the only reason why he was able to win. And it's written in Python. It seems pretty straightforward and pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, in 5 years, I'm sure they'll be getting through much more complicated games.
Oh, yeah. Maybe something like this next article. Super Mario Brothers World 2 Yoshi's Island is apparently a masterpiece, according to Ars Technica.
Okay.
So
I guess I've missed the main... I mean, I like it. It's just not... I guess I get annoyed by Baby Mario.
Yeah. And so this is a kind of series they have on Ars Technica, the masterpiece series. They've done mm-hmm. stuff like... DuckTales, Street Fighter 2, Robotron, Shadow of the Colossus, yada, yada, yada. So this is the newest one. And yeah, I mean, it has a newer, an updated art style that's different from the rest of the games. Mm-hmm. And
that's actually what I think is like the best part of mm-hmm. the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the art style. I just get annoyed at Baby Mario.
Yeah. So is Baby Mario and Mario two different people or the same person? Different ages.
It's the same person, different ages. I don't believe Mario has any clones or offspring.
What else do we got here? I think this is my favorite story of the week for no reason at all. Zelda gamers get it. A real life secret bombable entrance dungeon found in Japan. And so this is a picture someone put on Twitter where it's the stone wall that three of the stones are cracked perfectly, just like it would be in Legend of Zelda. And I just think it's so funny. I really want to throw a bomb at that thing. You know there's gold or something behind there, or a key.
Yeah, or erosion of some sort. I mean, the way I look at it is like every single dungeon has a bombable entrance if you use enough dynamite.
True, true. I just thought this was funny. Not really a news item, more of just a, I don't even know what you would call it.
Just an oddball internet thing.
Yes.
Let's see. Sonic the Hedgehog 2. So there's a lot of Sonic news this week. And a lot of it's because Sonic 30th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Is that why? I feel really old because like I didn't work the Sonic 1 launch. I worked the Sonic 2 launch. But That's an awful long time ago. And this is an article about just some random artwork. They say it's unseen, but it sure looks a lot like stuff that was used in the game. Some of it was obviously not used in the game, but a lot of it was.
Well, I have a whole Sonic segment to this episode. I forgot to put this in that, but it's funny. The top comment says that the third drawing from the top left, where Sonic is standing without smiling, is the exact same artwork as an air freshener he has at GameStop. And he has a link to it, and it is. So some of this artwork apparently was used in some random stuff.
I have some Legend of Zelda air fresheners that I've never taken out of the package, but I don't have a Sonic one.
Wonder what all that's... Does it smell like... I was going to say Rota seeds, but that would be Kakarot seeds, I guess.
I don't think they improve with age, so I think it's best if I don't take these out of the package.
Probably, yeah.
Whatever chemicals are, used to keep those things fresh, I'm sure. Long, long gone.
We have a Kotaku.au article. Pilot Wings Mellow Jazz showed SNES had a sound of all its own. And it's just a little article about how the SNES was really the first console that you could, you didn't have to like code the music. You could actually write the music with a series of like pitches and durations and stuff like that. You didn't have to write it in assembly. And apparently it shows, according to this article. And yeah, Pilot Wings does have a great soundtrack.
So because it's Australia, they also have a link to an article on Kotaku Australia about what they call cheap whiskey. But it's about bottles that are under $100. Is whiskey really expensive in Australia? I have to ask one of my coworkers.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, because if you did like, and I realize we have the state of Kentucky, right? Which helps, because they produce a lot of whiskey. So like if I go to the grocery store right now, I would actually have a hard time finding a bottle of whiskey over $100.
Yeah.
I probably have to ask someone where I could find such a thing.
Yeah, yeah. So shipping it over there probably definitely adds to the expense. And
I got to imagine, I'll ask. It seems like a product they could make there. You go to Trader Joe's. Again, we're not sponsored by Trader Joe's. I just happen to love going to Trader Joe's. And they must have like 900 different Australian wines. So yeah. Clearly they know how to produce alcohol in Australia.
Yeah.
All right. So this is something I may end up buying. Not all of these, but some of them. Retrobit is republishing a bunch of shooters by, I'm going to get the game company's name wrong, Toplan.
Looks right, yeah.
What do you think? Is that right?
Yeah, I think I've never heard it pronounced out loud.
Right, but they've got, they're doing Fire Shark, Same, which I don't know, Hellfire, Zero Wing, and Truxton. And
Zero
like,
Wing.
Truxton is the, yeah.
Zero
Do you like Truxton?
I don't know that one. Zero Wing's the only one I've played.
Okay, so yeah, Zero Wing is famous for its bad translation. Mm-hmm. And Truxton was like a borderline launch Genesis game. And I played it back in the day. I don't think I've ever owned it. And it's like, it's weird that I'm not like great at shooters, but I really like Truxton a lot. So I'm sort of tempted to get that one. They are going to offer like a collector's edition where you can get like all of them. But if you can buy them individually, I think Truxton is probably the first on my list.
So individually they're $45, and to get the set is $160 US.
Okay. Yeah, I mean Truxton reminds me a lot of Blazing Lasers.
Okay.
So just very sort of like stylistically in playstyle, and it's not super difficult. That's why I've always liked it as a shooter, is that I didn't think it was insanely difficult. Yeah, I predict Zero Wing will be the highest selling of these, though, just out of irony.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You got to let us know if you pick any of these up. I'd like to know the quality of these cards.
So what is this here? Balloon fight ROM hack that puts Mario in.
Yeah, I guess in our series of Mario ROM hacks the past many weeks. Wow, is this an incredible one. So it's pretty much balloon fight with a bunch of Super Mario sprites. And it looks great. It really does.
Yeah.
It looks like they put some effort into this. And it
goes, I think it's pretty neat.
It goes for the the regular game, and then my favorite, the balloon race, or what's it called, the journey, the adventure. I forget what it's called. The one where you're just going from right to left over and over.
Yeah, kind of bonus stage.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the bonus. Is that really? I don't know if that's the right term, but I know what you're talking about. Balloon Fight would have been a very successful game if this is what they did the first time around.
Oh, yeah. I think it sold pretty well because it was really early, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you didn't have a lot of choices, but I mean, it didn't sell like Super Mario Brothers or Metroid kind of numbers.
No.
I think people only buy Balloon Fight now because they're hoping to find a Famicom adapter inside.
What? They had that?
Well, some of them did. Like, this is why, like, if you have a 5-screw Balloon Fight, it's worth some amount of money because there's an off chance that inside the cart, I looked at mine already. There's an off chance that inside the cart, it's a Famicom cart actually hooked into a converter.
I did not know that. I'm going to have to look at my cart. That's crazy.
Yeah. So a lot of launch NES games, if they have 5 screws, there's a chance that it has a Famicom converter inside.
That's pretty cool.
I've taken all of mine apart. I did not get a single converter.
I'm definitely going to have to look for that.
So I mean, by, you know, so I probably went through 20 carts and didn't find one. So your chances aren't great, but I wish you luck.
I'll let you all know if I find one. Let's see. This next one, we have a Humble Bundle deal. It's the Make Games, Play Games deal by Raspberry Pi. Humble Book Bundle, Raspberry Pi Press Gaming. We've teamed up with Raspberry Pi Press for our newest bundle. Get ebooks like Code the Classics Volume 1, Wireframe Number 41, Make Games with Python, and just a whole bunch of really cool stuff in here where you can learn how to make your own games, and you can play some games as well on the Raspberry Pi. It's a really good deal, and as of right now, there's almost 19 days left. So by the time this podcast launches, you should have a lot of time still to grab this if you want.
Yeah, these usually run for a couple weeks.
Yeah,
and yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in here, including some stuff about coding games in Python.
Yeah, we are not sponsored by Humble Bundle, by the way.
No, sir. Give Link a break, celebrating the legends of people other than Zelda.
Did you get a chance to go through this slideshow?
No, I somehow missed this one. So this is Zelda-style games?
Yeah, it's pretty much saying there's a whole bunch of games that are probably as good as Zelda. And a lot of them, I don't think so, but like they're pretty close. Like Newtopia on TurboGrafx-16, which will be a Game Club game eventually. Beyond Oasis... what are some other noteworthy ones here?
It's amazing that they don't have any of the East games, which ironically are the closest to Zelda, much closer to Zelda than some of these other games.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I loved Okami on PS2. Darksiders I did not like, which is on Switch now. 3D Dot Game Heroes, I don't know that one.
I don't either. I've heard of Oceanhorn. I've been told it's a game I would really like. Because it's essentially a Wind Waker ripoff. What here would I actually recommend?
I mean, this Crusader of Senti, is that how it's pronounced? Yeah. It looks like Link to the Past.
Yeah, it's not that good.
Really?
That one I played, I was not really happy with it. Luckily, I think I played a ROM, so I think it ripped off. Beyond Oasis is pretty good. Newtopia is on the TurboGrafx Mini, and it has a sequel. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Golden Axe Warriors 1 that I've only played for a minute or two, and I'd probably enjoy it if I played all the way through.
Have you played Okami?
I have not.
I think you would love that one. It's just such a classy game. And you kind of move at your own pace.
Okay. They also missed Golvellius for the Sega Master System, which I played a very, very long time ago. And is, I don't know what year it was developed, but it clearly is very, very similar to Zelda. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other games they may have missed here, but I'm blanking out. It's been a long day.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to go. Well, one they missed that they won't credit. There was the weird game Spiritual Warfare on the NES, which, if it was converted to a not religious game and given an official release, would be considered a pretty good game.
Mm. Yeah,
I don't really care about the religious message one way or another. The gameplay on it is actually pretty good. It's not as good as Zelda, but it's maybe better than some of the other games they listed on here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was kind of a random list.
Here are 12 games I've heard of. All right. yeah. I guess I could probably do articles like that about other subjects. Like, here are 12 baseball teams that I've heard of.
That are different than, yeah, the Sox.
12 baseball teams like the Cubs.
I don't know.
All right. Console Wars, the documentary. Did you ever read the Console Wars book?
I have the audiobook. I think I've listened to it 3 times.
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah. So this is about the documentary. There's like a net. Although this is a docu. This is different than the Netflix show or whatever that's coming out.
I think this is the show. It wasn't Netflix. It was picked up by CBS All Access. This is what I'm assuming, because this is still who is it? Seth Green that produced this.
Well, this looks like a documentary, and I thought
Seth Rogen.
There was also a show being produced, like with actors and stuff.
See, that's what I thought as well. So maybe a listener can correct us, but because I was going to say this does not look like what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to either be a drama / comedy or a
okay. Well,
a reenactment.
Yeah. So this links to an article from 2 years ago, talking about Sony Pictures picking up the rights to make a movie based on Console Wars, which I haven't really seen too much news on lately.
They should still do that. Because yeah, this is not that. This is kind of like the that High Score series that was just on Netflix. It looks a lot more like that. Bunch of interviews and stuff like that, which nothing wrong with that, but if you already know all the details, it's just kind of different people telling you what you already know. You know what I mean? Instead of
okay,
actors, I don't know, dramatizing it. I'm going to watch it. I'm probably going to love it. But September 23rd, which is right around the corner. Next week, I think.
All right. So in an effort for me to keep the show G-rated, even though in real life I am not especially G-rated. Butt Warp in Super Mario 64.
Yeah, and that's this whole story. That backwards jump up the steps and through the wall has a title. And people kind of think it's funny. So there you go. That's that story.
There you go.
I mean, if anyone's watched Mario 64 speedrun, you know what we're talking about, where you keep jumping backwards up the steps and through walls and stuff like that.
Yeah, and Mario 64 is kind of one of the more annoying games to watch speedruns for.
I agree. One of my all-time favorites, but I don't watch the speedruns. This is, I almost put 2 stories here, but this will cover the other story. A civilization creator shoots down our memories of a nuke happy Gandhi. So we actually covered on our podcast that in Civilization 1, there was a bug where Gandhi's, I guess, angry, aggressive level was so low that it could drop even lower, going all the way up to 255 or whatever the top is, and he just becomes a nightmare and starts nuking everyone. And Sid Meier says this isn't the case, and he says it in his new memoir that was released, which is kind of the story that this covers. The myth has been debunked, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
So we are entering our unintended Sega, or really Sonic segment. And I forget if we've mentioned the, is it pronounced Sage or Sage? I'm
Let's go Sage.
Yeah, Sage. And that stands for Sonic Amateur Games Expo.
Yeah, and so this is, we talked about something similar like an episode or two ago. This is something different with a similar name.
With a lot of cool stuff. The first thing is a Sonic Speed Course is a twist on SNES Classic. So it's a ROM hack of Kirby's Dream Cruise with all Sonic assets.
Okay.
And he says, there's something in here, I can't find the quote right now, and it's not even a long article, that almost made it like it wasn't a ROM hack. But our listeners are going to have to click on this and read it. It's seriously one page long to find it. Yeah. I'm like cross-eyed at this
point. I am surprised that Sega never made a Sonic golf game.
That is surprising.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess golf is a very fast game. But
right, but I mean, Nintendo made Mario Golf, right? I mean, it's basically just, I can make a golf game, but Sonic is either the ball or the golfer.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Next one here is really impressive. Sonic 2 Sega Master System Remake goes above and beyond, and it really does. Have you seen this video at all?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of hard to believe that that is a Master System game, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, Sonic on Master System, this is Sonic 2 on Master System, the Sonic games on Master System are actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if all you had was a Master System and you wanted Sonic, they are, I think, really good versions.
But, yeah, this is just really impressive. And what is the third one we got here? Some DLC for Sonic Adventure on Dreamcast. Which, there's no storage in the Dreamcast, so I'm not sure how DLC would work.
I assume it's only for Dreamcast with some sort of a mod.
Yeah, or just emulation or something, yeah. Or you have to mod the ISO, something like that. I don't see any video here, but yeah, this one looked pretty neat though.
Hold on, I'm trying to read how this works here. You apparently can download it with the Dreamcast browser.
Whoa, but what does it download to?
I'm trying to read this here, man. To get started, you need to import the file Sonic Adventure VMS, blah, 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 into your memory card or PC. Use memory card editor. You then download, burn the file to see. Yeah, this is a lot of steps.
Well,
that's something, man.
Yeah. Well, if any of our listeners ever try any of these games, please email us, email@retrogameclub.net. And we have a pretty cool topic this week, right?
Yeah, we are going to talk to Nate Peters, who is responsible for the NES game Doodle World that we talked about last time.
Here we go.
All right, everybody. We are talking to Nate Peters, who is responsible for the game Doodle World that we talked about last episode. He's got a Kickstarter going. Nate, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely great to talk to you. Tell us about Doodle World. Like, what was the inspiration for this game?
So it was inspired by my daughter, who would draw these little doodles as a kid. And watching her draw them one day, I was trying to come up with an idea for a game for the Nest Maker Bite Off in 2019. And watching her draw these, I was like, hey, you know, that's some easy pixel art right there. And so I came up with the character, and it just kind of evolved from that.
So how long did this take?
About 18 months.
18 months? Oh, wow. That's actually about 30 months less than I was expecting. So it's
and that was off and on too. I would take breaks just getting burnt out with it and everything else. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you build this in?
I built it, well, of course, using Notepad++ for the assembly and using NestMaker for asset management and scripts.
Okay. All right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about like the Kickstarter, like what, you know, the kind of the tiers, the rewards.
So currently on the Kickstarter, as of today, we have sold out of the limited edition and the early bird. So right now what we have left is the digital pack, which gets you a ROM file, the PDF of the manual, and an MP3 soundtrack. And we have a cart-only pack, which includes everything from the digital pack, but it also gets you a standard gray cartridge of the game, and a box pack, which includes everything from the digital pack, but also gives you the standard box, an actual manual, a dust sleeve, a foam block, and a box of, or a little package of crayons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm actually working on the manual at the moment, and it's actually going to be a coloring book. It's an NES-sized nice. Manual, but all the pages are uncoded, so you can color them.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, I won't color mine, but... other people can if they want to. You should maybe give people a PDF of that so they can color it.
It'll come with the PDF as well. So.
With how good this looks and how good the gameplay looks, this doesn't seem like it's the first NES game you've ever coded.
It's actually the very first NES game I've ever coded.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah.
It's actually my first attempt at pixel art, too. So.
Yeah, yeah, wow. It's pretty... pretty amazing. I mean, I like the art style. We talked about this on the last episode too, but I really find the art style entertaining. Like it looks good, but doesn't look high, but like it's this weird thing. Like it's going to sound strange the way I say it. Like it's not high budget, but it looks great. You know, it's,
yeah, it's like
Undertale. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. I know exactly what you're saying. And I spent a lot of time just trying to get the look just right. Mm-hmm. I went through probably 3 or 4 iterations of just like the grass and the ground, trying to get that colored look just right.
So was that kind of was that one of the hardest parts, kind of trying to get the NES palette to look the way you wanted it to?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's strange because there's certain things you don't realize about the NES palette. Like there's no yellow in the NES palette at all. So trying to do something as simple as a pencil, it's you just got to work with what you have. It's like using really light browns and golds to make it look like a pencil. It ends up working on screen.
Well, yeah, because I mean, like, I think, Rob, you called this out last time, like the Notepad line color looks perfect.
Yeah. Fortunately, the NES palette is really heavy on the blues, so you got plenty of those to choose from.
So like, besides the colors, what were some of the hardest things to do in this game?
Honestly, the hardest part for me was probably boss development. Trying to script a boss at the end of every world I spent more time on that than anything else.
Did you have someone helping you test that to make sure there wasn't some like really cheap way to kill the boss right away?
Yeah, towards the end of development, I had about 10 play testers that were helping me with it. And we went through a month of testing and 13 versions before I finalized it.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's been a lot of work.
Tell us how you came about working with, Hakumi that did the music?
So he's also a NestMaker user, and I found him on the NestMaker forums and reached out to him, and he was like, absolutely, yeah, I'd love to help you out. And yeah, he came up with all the music, all the sounds, and he's actually a high school student in New Zealand.
Okay.
So, wow. Yeah, he doesn't even have an NES. He just likes to do chiptunes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I was not familiar with him before. So that's a pretty crazy story. In New Zealand, yeah. I know they were really under lockdown. So I'm sure you got plenty of time to write chiptunes.
Oh, absolutely. And his turnaround time is ridiculous. Like, hey, can you write me a track for this world? And I'll have it the next day already. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Were Was there any point where you ran into memory issues where you had to cut something or try to decode it and figure it out a different way?
I actually ran out of memory space for animations. So I'm actually locked down now as far as animations go. Even if I wanted to, I could make another monster. He's just not going to move. And I could do memory swapping if I wanted to, but it's like at this point, the game was near finalized and it was way too technical for something I wanted to do for a game of that caliber. There was not much more I needed to add at that point anyway. I just went back and trimmed some animations down.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like a random question, but I've toyed around with some retro console development too. And like, did you run into issues on clone systems where things worked great on an emulator, worked great on NES, and then you dropped it into one of these, $15 clone systems and the whole thing blew up?
Not that I'm aware of. I had my play testers test it out on different systems if they had them available, but I've yet to hear of any, have any issues with the Mapper 30, which is it's a 5K ROM or 512K ROM. That it's very similar to the Mapper 2 that Nintendo produced. There's, aside from a few older emulators, there's not much else that won't run it.
Oh, yeah. So this would be like, why don't you explain, like, I'm kind of a novice at the whole Mapper thing. What exactly is the distinction of Mapper 30 versus one of the others?
It's essentially memory management and ROM management on the hardware side. It's just determines the size of the memory map, essentially the ROM map, and the chip size and everything else.
Okay. So is that something you chose because you wanted to make, because you didn't want to, try and work in a smaller limit, or is that something that is like an artifact of using NESmaker?
It's actually an artifact of using NESmaker, and a lot of homebrewers use it. Mapper 30 was designed for homebrew. Okay. So when you're ordering boards and stuff like that from Infinite NES Lives, that's usually what you're going to get is a Mapper 30 board.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess that makes sense. Why not give, why not sell the thing that will definitely work for everybody, right?
Like, exactly.
No one has to try and fit onto it.
Yep, exactly.
Versus the old days, I guess. I guess in the old days, Nintendo gave you the cartridges. Maybe you never even thought about it.
Exactly. You built it for the mapper that you intended to use anyway. So. Yeah.
So what was the most fun thing about doing this game?
The most fun, honestly, was just playtesting it with my daughter and watching her face light up every time we'd come up with something new and she'd try it out. We'd flash the cart and throw it in the NES and she'd just light up playing it. She was the inspiration for the kids mode that we have.
Okay.
Because she would complain that the normal mode was too difficult for her. I said, all right, I've got space still. Let me basically copy all of normal mode over, make it a little bit smaller, make it easier, and give you kids mode. And she loves that. She just plays right through it.
Yeah, and lately that's the mode I'm playing most games on because I'm trying to get through my backlog as much as possible. So
right, I don't call it easy mode. I call it adult mode.
Okay. Yeah, that has other implications too, though. But there's a difficulty. Like, what would you compare it to?
What do you mean?
Like what other, well, like if you were to compare the difficulty level to another NES game, is it Kid Icarus? Is it Mega Man? Is it?
Oh, absolutely not. I would say the original Super Mario Brothers is what it most closely emulates.
Oh, it's, perfect.
Yeah, it's not a difficult game and I never intended it to be. I don't like NES hard games. Mm-hmm. I don't like games that are hard for the sake of being hard. I like games that you can just enjoy and play through and have a good time doing it.
Cool. Well, yeah. Yeah, that's mostly what I'm playing now too. So that's good. Do you have any plans? So this is already successful. By all means, people should still back it, even though it's already doubled its
score. Oh, absolutely.
Do you plan a sequel or something completely different?
My daughter brought that up today. She said, "So when are you going to start on number 2?" Okay. I said, "Well, let's take a break." I had intended they're doing another bite off right now, mm-hmm. and I intended on entering that, but I've quickly learned that running a Kickstarter is a full-time job. So I didn't even have time to work on anything right now, even if I wanted to. But yeah. I do intend to take money that I earned from this Kickstarter and put it right back into development, whether it be another NES game or figure out a way to port this game to a Switch or to another console as well.
Yeah, yeah, this actually does seem like the kind of thing you could easily see on the Switch store.
Yeah, the problem is Nintendo doesn't like emulator wrappers on their store because it can cause code injection and stuff like that. So you've got to find a way to port it natively.
Right. Yeah, Nintendo's vehemently opposed to anything emulation except for when they do it. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know that one? Yeah, so you'd have to come up. Yeah, I don't even know how. Maybe that's why we don't see a lot of NES games just being sold on the Switch store. They're always sort of remakes or upscales. And I guess the cool thing about doing stuff in Assembler is it's actually kind of fun.
It is.
The downside, of course, is now how do you port it? I mean, you could maybe port it to Commodore 64.
Yeah, exactly. It has zero portability at that point. Yeah. So, the easiest approach would be take all the assets I've already got pre-built and put them into something like Game Maker Studio, which has Switch compatibility, and just rebuild the game from scratch.
But it's the kind of thing where you could put it out there for, you know, 99 cents or $4.99 or whatever.
Exactly.
And just at some random interval, it'll sell a million copies.
Yeah. It's one of those things, you know, it's like I can just work on it on the side on the weekends. Like, all right, let's just knock a level out real quick. Because the hardest part, building the assets, is already done.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Rob, anything else you want to talk about?
No, I was actually back in the project right now.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you provide some updates on some of the characters. I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, some of the enemies, and they're all, of course, very, you know, notebook or, you know, drawing inspired.
Yeah, everything's office supply themed for the most part, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like exactly the kind of thing you would do on a snow day at home or something, you know.
Exactly. Kid. Yep. And that's what I attribute it to, you know, back in the day, like you said in the previous episode, just drawing on notepad paper, drawing Mario levels and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think I probably wasted a whole lot of time drawing game levels when I was younger.
I think we all did.
All
right. So, again, Doodle World out on Kickstarter.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you absolutely have to back this thing. If you like platform games and homebrew games, it just looks like a ton of fun. And can't wait to, you know, for it to arrive. When is the approximate ship date?
We're estimating January.
Okay.
2021. Like I said, the game's already done. Once Kickstarter ends, I'll place the order for all my parts, get them here to the house, and start putting it together.
Are you using the same company that creates carts that like a limited run uses, or is it something different?
The carts are coming from Infinite NES Lives. And they work with IM8-Bit. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Oh, yeah.
They're like limited run. And all my production stuff as far as box art and the boxes, the manual, all that stuff is being done by Retrotainment, Tim at Retrotainment Games. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
No, I'll check them out.
Yeah. They put out, let me see if I have it here. They have a Haunted Halloween. I think this is 86.
Yeah, yeah. So I played that game. The name, I'm like, I know I've heard that name, but yeah, I've seen that game.
Yeah. So, and they do really good production work. So I went with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Cool. Very, very cool. No better time to get into homebrew development right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a golden age right now of homebrew
development. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, absolutely.
So just kind of. Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, and with something like Nestmaker, it's their tagline is no coding required, but it's really not the case. But it's not a steep learning curve either. If you're familiar with assembly and just general machine language in general, you can pick it up really quick, and it's a lot of fun to play with.
So is that like your recommendation if someone wanted to get into NES development, start with Nestmaker?
Absolutely. Yeah, and the development community behind it is huge, and they're always helping each other out. So.
Cool. Yeah, that's always good to hear.
Yeah.
All right, Rob, anything else you want to cover?
No.
All right, so again, please check out the Kickstarter.
Yes.
And even if you, if for some reason you don't want this game, which by the way sounds awesome, just pitch in a buck. It's always my, my word. Always at least back the project.
And by all means, if you're on the fence, there's a demo on the Kickstarter that you can download and try out. So
cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, worst case, you back it, you get the game, and then when the sequel comes out, this one's worth, you know, thousands of dollars on eBay. That's
there you go. There you
go. All right, Nate, thank you so much for joining us.
It's good thanks to talk for having me, guys. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Nate, for coming on the show. Great interview. And I'm excited to get that in the mail and play it. And play that.
Yeah, make sure you back that game, man.
Yeah, yeah. They he mentioned that it has a kid mode, right? In the interview?
Yes. Yeah. He didn't want to call it easy mode, he said. Kids mode.
Yeah. So I'll try that one with my kids. All right. We got some game club going on here. I always go first, and you have a weird one. Let's have you go first this time.
Oh, yeah. I should have grabbed one of mine, but I did not. So I went with Mattel Electronics LED Football, which is, you know, a little old handheld game. I have the original, I have the repro. And it's really, it's actually kind of fun for the age, for, you know, for the age it is. I don't really know how to describe it. So essentially, it's not an LCD game. You control the offense, which is a series of dots on the screen. And, you basically hand off, well, you only really have running plays. There's a later version that has passing on it. Everything I've ever played is the one that just has running plays. Mm-hmm. And you have basically three buttons, up, down, and then one button that is either left or right, depending on which side of the field you're on. All right?
Okay.
All right. And then, so your goal is just to get past the other dots that represent the defense. And then after so many downs, you can then punt it, you know, if you don't make it. And then player two takes over, which means, again, this is pre-COVID, you hand your LED football to your friend, who then plays by themselves until, you know, they run out of downs, and then you pass it over again. Mm-hmm. So it's two player, but it's two player definitely not concurrent.
Okay.
All right. But it's actually kind of fun. And what's kind of neat about this is, like, the model, like, this basic game, I also have, like, a Burger King Happy Meal, although they aren't called Happy Meal because it's Burger King, like a Burger King kids toy that's kind of the exact same game, but it's from, like, the early 2000s. Because it's a thing you can just do with lights and screen. You know, you don't have to have, like, a full thing. So, yeah, it's really just all through lights. I won't say it's the first ever football game, but the first version was made in 1977. So it is darn close to the first football game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it's not the first, certainly it's got to be the first portable football game. I don't think I'm wrong in making that unresearched statement. and like I said, yeah, there's a bunch of later iterations. There's Football 2, which, again, gives you, like, some passing options. I have one of those also, but the one I have is also an original, and it's a little bit, it feels like it may fall apart if I try and use it, so I really haven't played it. And then there's, like, a couple of knockoff ones that I've never used. But you know how it was in that era? People would just make, you know, knockoff things all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, the this 1977 one is the one I remember most. And yes, I think you can get a repro of, and the repro is almost, you know, you have to know the system is really well to tell the difference. Obviously, like, the feels may be a little bit different, but if you just saw, like, two of them laying side by side, brand new, it would be pretty hard to tell them apart.
Huh. Yeah, this is one I just didn't have time to get into this week.
Oh yeah, because you actually have to have one. That's the problem.
Well, didn't you say there might be an Android kind of port of it?
There, we linked to something that looks like it's an Android version. I don't know how official or whether or not that's sketchy. Oh, so here's a fun story. I used to
I was at it, worked at a different company, not the company I'm at now, but a different one. I won't call them out. I had to work a lot of weird hours. So there were like a few times I'd have to go in at like, you know, midnight to work like a deployment or something. Because they didn't have good remote access. You know, it was one of those things like I could possibly do my job remotely, but it would take twice as long. So, you know, the half hour drive to the office is worth it. And I'm going to check in with security one night at midnight, because if you're coming to the office, you know, at some weird hour, you actually have to go like talk to a security guard. And I'm talking to the security guard, and he's like, "Oh, you're Hugh Johnson." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, that's me." He's like, "Oh yeah, I sit up at your desk and play your games all the time." So this is like our night security guard would go hang out at my desk and play my Mattel football that I had out.
If you had to pick anyone's desk there, yours was probably the most fun, right?
Yeah, because I just had a ton of these things on my desk. I had just a pile of various Mattel handhelds. I had baseball, football. I think I have a hockey one that I had out there. And then a couple of, like I mentioned, these like Happy Meal toys. Mostly because I get a lot of visitors at work. And my current job, I don't have a lot of games sitting out. Because it's a different office layout, so it doesn't quite, there's not a real good spot to put them. That's also at that same place. I also at one point had a repro Atari 2600 hooked up to a projector in one of the conference rooms.
Was that popular? Weren't using
the projector. Yeah, that was not super popular, but had that. I think I had a Dreamcast hooked up there once too.
Nice.
Mostly again because I worked a lot of like late night deployments, and sometimes I didn't really have a lot to do. I was mostly just there in case something went wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could sit and play my backup Dreamcast on a VGA monitor at the office.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do something to keep yourself awake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I did the New Zealand story. New Zealand is one word, apparently. Sometimes only. And yeah, this is a title game from 1988. And the music, like most title games of that time, the music's fantastic. You play a, so you're going through New Zealand and you play a Kiwi that is trying to save your girl, your Kiwi girlfriend, and along the way, a bunch of other like kitty Kiwis, I guess. And it's kind of a, it's a platformer, kind of one hit die platformer. You can jump and shoot and swim and fly on little balloon floaty things. And it's an all right game. I like this game. I played the arcade, original arcade one from Taito. I played the NES one and the PC Engine one. The Sega Master System one looks better than the NES, but the sound is weird, I guess. I don't know. But speaking of sound, the same music composer as Bust the Move did the music in this, and you could just tell. And yeah, the bosses are fun because it's like you'll fight a sperm whale, and after a while you end up in his mouth, and it's kind of a it's hard to describe, but it just makes the battle different than other stuff at the time. And yeah, I'd really like to know what our listeners think of this game, because I do like it, but at the same time, there's 100 games that are just a little bit better than this, where it's like, I feel kind of the same way as like, oh my God, what's the Hudson Soft game? Adventure Island, right?
Okay, yeah. I can see that.
Where it's just like, it's a good game, but there's 100 other games, if I'm going to sit down and do some retro gaming, I'm going to play before this. But still, pretty good. I would recommend it. And I'd like to know if our listeners, you know, have fond memories of this one, or, you know, maybe you're not from the States and it was bigger where you live, but do you play this one at all?
Yeah, so I have this Taito Legends collection. for PS2, which has it. So I tried it on there. I don't know. Kind of was my thing. It's like the graphics are really nice. It's kind of a cool concept. I only played it for a few minutes. I did have it running all day. So I did find a long play of it on YouTube and left that running on one of my monitors here during the day.
It's a long game.
The long play was over an hour, which for an arcade game is insane.
Yeah. But I think we kind of agree where there's nothing wrong with it. It's a good game, but we just kind of don't care.
Right. So when you pop it in, you know, into the PS2 and you have a collection that also has like, what else was on here? Oh, Space Invaders Part 2, Space Invaders, Jungle Hunt, you know, even Zookeeper, you're going to switch games pretty quickly, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, this is a really good collection. There might even be a Vita version of this. Not Vita. What's the other thing? PSP.
PSP. Yeah, I think there is.
I think I don't have that, but I would definitely like to get it.
This is on, I guess one of the best ports of this is on DS, but yeah. Arcade, NES, Amiga, Commodore 64, Amstrad, CPC, which I don't even really know what that is. ST, Mega System, Spectrum, Mega Drive, PC Engine, FM Towns, which I've never played, 68000, which I've never played, and the Virtual Console. So you have lots of ways to play this.
Yeah. So this is one of those games that's like ported to everything.
Yeah. And I guess the DS port is kind of a remaster. So that might be the one to go to.
I did not even look for that one. What does that go for?
I didn't see. Let's see what prices are on.
It is about, loose copies are about $10, and box copies could be $25 to $30.
That's not bad for a loose copy.
Well, someone has it for 99 cents right now with $4 shipping.
Wow.
So, that's probably the best deal right now.
I mean, you might even be able to get that deal, because I don't think a lot of people are buying this game.
Yeah, there's a lot of copies for sale right now.
So when we were initially recording this episode, Hugh and I were pretty tired, and we forgot to tell you what the new Game Club games were. So I'm re-recording this part at my office. So my game is Summer Games or Olympic Summer Games. Pick either one. You know, the Olympics are supposed to be right now, so and they were postponed till next year, so this could give us a little bit of that. And Hugh's game is Dungeon Explorer, probably on the TurboGrafx. So, if you play any of those games, please let us know. And back to the show that we screwed up initially. If any of our listeners play any of these games or have any projects or interview ideas or just want to say hi, check in, talk about some retro stuff, tell us what you think of High Score or Console Wars documentaries. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. And for the first time ever in 62 episodes, no emails. And I was actually kind of expecting this. A majority of our emails come from the West Coast, and they have a lot going on this week.
I don't have anything real profound to say, other than I hope all of our listeners are safe.
Both
the West Coast and of course like Gulf area are having just terrible weather right now.
Weather's
not even the right term for what's going on in the West Coast, but awful. I mean, you know, the company I work at now is headquartered out of San Francisco. I've only been to the city a couple times, but a lot of people on like our internal chat rooms have been posting like photos of the sky, which again looks like, you know, the end of a Persona game. You know what I mean? It's like, well, the world's about to end unless you go do this random task, get this egg from a cave or whatever. it's unbelievable. And when you think about it, like the wildfires are not. It's not like the wildfires are right next door to San Francisco, but they're just so intense that even in San Francisco, you're getting this, you know, glowing nighttime.
Yeah, just crazy, crazy times. But we do hope to hear from you. And we do have some social media feedback that Zach runs. Thank you, Zach.
Yeah, thank you.
His question of the week was, what new retro style games are you playing? Someone here says Riddled Corpses EX and Downwell, which I've heard of Downwell, but not the first one. And then about the At Games Legends Ultimate Arcade Cabinet. I know in some of the mini games they've put out, rather than use the actual ROM, they put the NES version. On the plus side, the panel that includes the spinner and the trackball is pretty outstanding. It would be an ideal like RetroPie conversion. And yeah, that might be the reason to buy that At Games cabinet. And what else do we have here? Nate from our interview gave us a shout out for giving him a shout out. Elliot just discovered us. He's only on episode 7 and he's enjoying it very much. And his homemade cabinet running RetroPie 3. He has a homemade cabinet running RetroPie 3 and he sent us a picture of it. And it looks really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we can find a way to share this on the other social media channels, but like, or reshare it, however that works. I've been on social media in so long, I forgot how all that stuff works. but this is really amazing. I would pay money for this. I've messed around with some RetroPie setups. This is like something like this is exactly what I would want.
Yeah. It's a, bar top, 2-player, 6-button. Yeah. It has a nice marquee and everything and looks like a pretty nice screen, nice LCD screen. So yeah, Elliot, please, keep that feedback coming and keep, sending us any of your projects. And again, if anyone else wants to write us, you could do the email at retrogameclub.net. You could hit us on Facebook, which is currently, I guess, ruining the world. But if you want to get directly to the Retro Game Club, you just go to facebook.retrogameclub.net or at RGC Podcast on Twitter. And Zach will forward us everything you have.
Yes. Stay off Facebook except for our page.
That's about it. Yeah.
That's about it. Yeah. Yeah. You can check it for video game news. Don't get health information from Facebook.
Or political or really anything. Just nothing.
Yeah. Nothing that could have like implications on anybody's life. Video games are fun, but you know, chances are, see, that's not true. There have been some really horrible game related things, haven't there? Yeah, but I guess stay off social media except for our site.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We have a very strict no politics, keep everything cool policy. Pretty much a one strike and you're out policy. So and we haven't had to talk to anyone about it. It's been fantastic. So thank you, everyone, for being so cool. And I think that wraps it up.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.